Welcome, everyone, to episode 125 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about the top contenders in the NBA and if we're nervous about them heading into the playoffs. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And until the end of the month, we're being hosted on FanRag Sports. So check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA stuff at FRS Hoops with a Z. Again, a reminder that come next week, we will be hosted somewhere else. So subscribe however you are doing it already, iTunes or whatever Android app you use, because after Monday, we will not be on FanRag. With all of that said, joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
I can't wait for Creed 2.
You finally got through all of the Rockies?
Oh, not finally. We just forgot to talk about it last time. I saw every movie from Rocky 1 to Creed, one movie every night.
Yep.
And just went through it. So, yeah, that was something. That was a week.
You.
I never want to see Rocky V ever again.
No, Rocky V is terrible. I warned you about that one.
You did, absolutely, yeah. But I had to. You know,
you
have to.
But you had the benefit of knowing that that wasn't the final Rocky. At least, like, imagine people. I forget when that came out, but like you live with that for like 20 years.
1990.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, so like 15 years. You're like, is that the last time we're going to see Rocky? Like that travesty of a movie.
Yeah.
Nope. So at least you only had to wait one night to see him come back and return to glory.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. Next up, you know, is Rambo, because I've never I just was never on the Sylvester Stallone wagon at any point. So I have to see if there's a streaming service out there in Denmark that delivers all the Rambo flicks. If not, I might have to go shopping. Now I just want to get through it so I can add that to my IMDb page.
that makes sense. And speaking of Philadelphia Heroes, Mort, that's a great way to transition. Before we talk about the top contenders, we need to talk about the big news from Monday, the out-of-the-blue news from Monday. Markelle Fultz, after missing 68 games with the shoulder injury that sidelined him since October, made his return to the Sixers. Mm-hmm. He played 14 minutes, had 10 points, 8 assists, 4 rebounds. Mort, you said you caught the game. Did you watch it while it was happening or this morning?
No, I saw it while it was happening, I didn't catch all of it. I caught the first half, and then I got too damn tired to carry on. And then I saw highlights in the morning.
Nice.
I mean, he had that one airball in the airball jumper in the first half where you were like, uh-oh. So that's kind of where I left off with him.
Okay.
And then when I returned in the morning and saw his stat line and saw the highlights, I was like, oh, good on him for having a much better second half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first jumper, at least the form looked good. That was more what I wanted to see. I didn't really care if the shots went in. It was more like, does he still have that weird little elbow hitch? So, yeah, he took the one jumper in the first quarter, I think, like, pretty quickly after he subbed into the game with about 3 minutes left in the first. And his first possession, he turned the ball over. But, it was, like, a nice, aggressive move trying to go to the basket. And then that didn't sap his aggressiveness moving forward. Like, I was afraid that he would have, like, one bad turnover and miss, like, airball one jumper and then would just go into his shell.
Right.
But, no, he stayed aggressive the whole night, which was great to see. So, yeah, Mort, what are your overall takeaways from what you saw out of Fultz Monday and what it means for the
confidence
moving forward?
Confidence, confidence, confidence. I mean, when you attack the basket, you have to assume that there's no fear in him because he might get fouled. Everyone knows that attacking the basket could lead to free throws.
Yep.
And I think that's a huge step because, as you saw, like, You had guys previously in the NBA who could not shoot free throws and who would just stay on the perimeter and take very uncontested jump shot and just did not want to get near the foul line. And Fultz, to his credit, was like, nope, F that. I'm going to attack. Yeah. Which I really like. But I do have one more one question that doesn't surround Foles here, but it's just so crucial. Did we find has anyone located JJ Redick's body yet?
What happened to JJ?
Oh, did you not see that Jamal Murray absolutely murdered him?
Oh no, I was too busy watching Joel Embiid. I forget who he did it over.
Oh, okay.
He had a murder dunk late in the game.
Oh yeah, Jamal Murray just cramped so hard on JJ. It was beautiful.
Well, Fultz got him back with a little chase down block in the fourth quarter, I believe, early in the fourth. I mean, I think you're spot on, Mort. The confidence there. Like you're talking about guys who are afraid to get to the free throw line. I think of like Rajon Rondo right away. You know, guys who pass up open layups because he was like, oh shit, I'm gonna get fouled, and I'm not gonna do that. But yeah, that. You know, Fultz is like, he was a little out of control, especially at first, but that's to be expected. Like, he's a rookie point guard. He's
set playing out for 68 games, right, of like, he's
playing his fifth NBA game. I'm not sweating that too hard. Nope. I think you're right. The confidence and the aggressiveness and that saying the whole night was the biggest sign, more so than, you know, obviously I'm encouraged by the fact his jumper doesn't look horrendous anymore. Right. But yeah, I mean, more like the mindset that he played with last night, I think, is the most promising sign moving forward. I hope he can keep it up, obviously. You know, it seemed like his night was over. He played about, I think, 5 minutes between the first and second quarter, and then about five more minutes between the third and the beginning of the fourth, and then Brett Brown pulled him out. You know, when he came in the third quarter, it was a three-point game, and then when he came out 5 minutes later, it was a 15-point game. So he had a couple of layups during that, a few assists as well. Like, he played a crucial role in, you know, that was a close game for three quarters. The Nuggets, I think they had an 8-point lead at halftime even. It looked like the Sixers were maybe going to lose that one. And then he helped swing the tide. They end up winning by 20. And I think my favorite part of the game was with about 3 minutes left, first there was a "We want Fultz" chant. But then all the people in Philly started doing the Vikings. They do the little skull chant where they raise their arms and do that, which we appropriated with Nick Foles earlier in the year during the NFC Championship game. But then we went next level and started doing the skull chant with Fultz. So then Brett Brown brought him back in. And I think that's where we really saw, you know, he hit a couple jumpers late in the game, including a 20-footer, both of which, for whatever reason, Mason Plumlee was switched on to him, which,
yeah,
that's certainly a coaching strategy. I don't know if it's a good one, but it is a strategy. But I'm encouraged by the fact that, you know, he saw that. He's like, this dude's not going to be able to keep up with me, so I'm just going to, you know, dribble to my spot and pull up without hesitation.
Yeah. Yep. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the hell happened in those 68 games and in the summer. I mean, at some point, we are bound to get a story out there that really details what happened, because the reports that we've had right now are very conflicting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to get the full story there. Like, Kyle Newbeck of Philly Voice had a really good story back in mid-February. Oh,
yeah,
he did,
yeah.
Which is, honestly, I'm guessing that's the most detail we're going to get out of him. Like, Fultz, after the game, a couple reporters asked him about the shoulder injury, and he just didn't say anything. Stephen A. Smith and all of his blowhard glory put him on blast for that today, which, whatever. Like, I don't care. I mean,
Stephen A. Smith still, you know, exist?
Right.
I didn't know.
If a dumbass shouts in the wood, could anyone hear him? I don't really, you know, I would love to know the full details, but we're probably never going to find out. And if this is a blip on his successful 15-year career, I don't particularly care. Like,
it's, right.
You know, ultimately, it was, yeah, you know, it was mostly a lost season, but the Sixers have still won now 43 games. I mean, they've defied expectations really throughout the entire season.
I mean, it just wouldn't be a Philadelphia 76ers rookie.
Right.
If
he didn't miss a majority of his rookie season.
Apparently, that's just tradition at this point. I mean, yeah, look, you wanted Mikal Bridges. I mean, poor Mikal, ready to miss the entire first year.
What freak injury is going to afflict him in the next 3 months? It's a good question. Before we move on from Fultz, though, Mort, what do you think his return means moving forward for the Sixers, who are, you know, they've already clinched a playoff spot. They're jostling for home court advantage, at least in the first round. Still could move up to the 3 seed if they beat Cleveland. They have a game in early April that will probably be a decisive move there. So how much do you see Fultz helping them in the playoffs, if at all?
Oh, I mean, look, before Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova came aboard, I think it's fair to call Philadelphia's bench for absolute trash.
Yes, correct.
It was really bad, so there was really no level of depth. Now you have Bellinelli, Ilyasova, who's given that bench a huge jump.
Yep.
Add Markelle Fultz to that second unit. Now you've got something. Now you've got some legitimate depth. Yeah. Not something that necessarily rivals Toronto's depth.
No.
But it's not, you know, it's not dimensions off anymore.
Yeah. I mean, right. The bench before the All-Star break was 26.
Oh, it was atrocious.
It was 26th in terms of points per game, and it had a bottom 10 net rating of minus 3.2. So they moved up slightly since Bellinelli and Ilyasova arrived, but they still were like league average to below league average. I think they were around league average in points and then still a little bit below in net rating. And their biggest struggle has been shot creation. Because, you know, I love TJ McConnell, but because he's a limited shooter, teams don't necessarily respect him behind the three-point line that much.
Yeah.
I think Fultz, you know, Denver was giving him space. I think teams are probably going to adjust and force him. They're going to start playing him like Ben Simmons or like TJ until he can prove he can hit that open three-pointer. But, I mean, he just showed the passing gifts he showed Monday night were, I mean, highly encouraging. Like, he had a behind-the-back dribble pass to Embiid that led to free throws. He hit Covington and Redick for a couple of threes. You know, he had one like early possession where he like dribbled toward the hoop and did one of his little spin moves and realized like, oh nope, they walled that off pretty well. But then Ersan Ilyasova was standing there 14 feet away, so he just passed on the ball. Ilyasova drained the jumper. So I think if nothing else, Fultz will help the bench avoid those long scoring droughts, which will be huge. We'll talk about Toronto's bench in a little bit. In fact, you know, the bench in the playoffs probably isn't going to get as much burn as it is during the regular season, particularly late in the regular season. But the Sixers have a ridiculously easy schedule over these final 10 games. I think they only play Cleveland and Milwaukee, and then I believe Detroit as well. And those are the only three teams on their schedule that are not completely tanking. So Fultz should have an opportunity to get some actual run in these final 10 games, get a little bit more comfortable. And like, I don't think he's going to move into the starting lineup by any means. Like, the Sixers starting lineup is one of the best in the league, at least in terms of net rating. So Brett Brown knows that. He's not going to shake anything up. But if, you know, if Fultz can provide some extra punch off the bench, both as a scorer and a shot creator for him and others, yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's going to hurt the Sixers. I think, you know, I'm guessing Brown would have a pretty quick hook for him if he starts seeing him play recklessly. But if he plays like he did Monday night, it's only going to help, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, what's the alternative?
Right. Jared Bayless. That's the alternative.
Yeah. Bayless is probably going to be useful in the playoffs, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now I just want to see development minutes anyway.
Yeah,
I feel as though Philly could actually trot out a pretty nice secondary lineup with Fultz at the point, Belly at the two, TLC at the three, Ersan at the four, and Rashawn Holmes at the five. I mean, that's not... I mean, look, that would beat the Bulls right now.
That's true. I mean, Rashawn is not getting that many minutes. I would guess Amir Johnson would be the backup five.
I don't care. I want Rashawn. Yeah. That's why I mentioned him, because I feel Rashawn is a lot better than Amir Johnson, and I'm low key annoyed with Brett Brown for not playing my boy a little bit more.
You should be happy, because that means he's going to get packaged with the number 10 pick. It'll go to the Bulls for number 8, so they can take Mikal Bridges.
Why should I be happy about that? He'll just end up playing behind Cristiano Felicio or something. that would be a horrible place to land.
That's true. But yeah, I mean, they have I think Justin Anderson didn't play Monday night, but he's played he's played some key spot minutes off the bench as well. So yeah, I think Philly, if they weren't already, I think they are now, especially the first round matchup that no team's going to be excited to draw. So I'm pretty excited. Obviously, it's been a surprising great development in Philly for the past 24 hours. So all good news there. We need to now switch our focus and talk about some of the top contenders that have not gotten as much good news as of late. And I mean, we have to start with the Golden State Warriors.
Are you saying that it's bad news learning that Stephen Curry is going to be out for the first round of the playoffs?
It is mildly bad news, yeah. So yeah. He came back, he missed six games because of that ankle injury, came back Friday against the Hawks, looked like Steph Curry, and then JaVale McGee took a tumble in the third quarter right into Steph's, I believe it was his left knee. He suffered a grade 2 MCL sprain. The Warriors initially announced that he would be reevaluated in 3 weeks, and at the time they made that announcement, it was on Saturday. The playoffs were starting 3 weeks from that day. Reevaluate does not mean he was coming back at 3 weeks. It was just they're going to see how he's doing progress-wise. And Steve Kerr, a day or two later, followed up and said, look, Steph's not playing in the first round. It's just, you know, he didn't like officially rule him out, but he set the expectations that he is not playing in the first round. A grade 2 MCL sprain usually takes about 6 weeks to recover from. So yeah, I mean, not only will he probably miss the first round, but he's most likely going to miss some of the second as well. They're also, you know, the Warriors, we mentioned in recent episodes that they're also banged up with their other stars. KD's got the rib injury, Klay Thompson has the fractured thumb, Draymond Green's nursing the pelvic condition, and now an illness.
Oh, no. Draymond is actually, I just saw this.
Oh, yeah.
It's a treat. Draymond Green, a variety of issues, downgraded from probable last night to doubtful this morning.
Yeah, so there we go. We don't know what that variety is, but it's called, he needs rest before the playoffs. But all three of those guys should be back by the time the playoffs start. Steph is the only guy who we're assuming is going to be absent come mid-April. But Mort, how nervous are you about the Warriors now that, you know, assuming Steph missed the first round, do you think they're at risk of a first-round upset?
No, that's probably a little bit too aggressive, but it does make them human,
yeah.
I feel. So whoever they end up meeting, unless it's been written in stone yet, I don't think so, right?
They're going to be the number 2 seed we have no idea. The Pelicans,
that's Utah right now.
The Pelicans are 5th. They're tied with the Spurs at 43-31. The Thunder are only a half game ahead of them at 44-31, and then Minnesota and Utah are both tied at 42-32. But
if we stick with the current of Utah, right, who's got the league's, I want to say, best defense at this point in time, and without having the luxury of Curry around, they could take 2 games, couldn't they?
This might be dumb. And, like, I fully acknowledge that this
could be
my face. But, like, I think, depending on who they draw, I do think without Curry, there's at least a road for them to be upset in the first round. And I agree that Utah is probably their worst matchup in terms of, like, who I would be most scared of if I'm a Warriors fan. I don't expect Kawhi Leonard to come back this year. And even if he does, he's missed so much time. We just don't know what he's going to look like. He's not going to be the Kawhi Leonard of old, most likely. Like, he's not coming back and playing 40 minutes a night. So, if I'm a Warriors fan, ironically, I'm rooting for the Spurs to fall to 7 just because we've seen the Warriors demolish the Spurs without Kawhi before.
Right.
At first I was like, well, Minnesota's interesting because, you know, Jimmy Butler's going to be back soon. He's had basically 2 months off to rest. But now I'm realizing, like, yeah, but the rest of the Timberwolves didn't. The rest of the Timberwolves have been run into the ground in the meantime because Tibbs refuses to play his bench and has been playing Wiggins and Teague.
Yeah, it's bad.
And Towns, it's really bad. Like, 40-plus minutes a game. So I think they're probably just going to be out of gas by the time the playoff starts. Mm-hmm. I mean, personnel-wise, you know, they have Butler and Wiggins to match up with Thompson and Durant. So, like, in theory, on paper, like, Jeff Teague would have an advantage over Quinn Cook. You know, theoretically, they would have the personnel to match up well with the Timberwolves or with the Warriors. I just think Tibbs has he's just completely annihilated that team. Like, they needed a bench, first of all, and they just you can tell those guys. I mean, Gibson's had comments. I forget who. I think Teague had something this week where he's just like, we need to have a bench. Like, we're tired. Yeah. We need a bench. What are you doing?
It's not good. No. Is what we're kind of alluding to here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Utah, I would think, would be the best chance of springing the upset, if only because, like, Jay Crowder and Joe Ingles can, again, that personnel-wise, that's a decent matchup against Klay and KD. I don't know if the Warriors have an answer for Rudy Gobert. I mean, you know, I love
Sasa yeah. Make sure to injure him, I guess.
Right, exactly. Like, I think Rudy Gobert is going to eat his lunch. And then, again, you know, Ricky Rubio is not an all-star point guard by any means, but he's shown some, like, he's had the ability to really pop off for some points this year. And then Donovan Mitchell, who knows what we're going to get out of him. So, like, if it's a Warriors Jazz first round series, I'm still picking the Warriors, but I don't feel good about it.
No. Pretty much in agreement all the way through there. Yeah.
What about, let's assume they get through the first round, then they're probably playing the winner. I mean, Portland is not locked into the three yet, but they have a 2-game lead on the Thunder with, what, 7-8 games left? Like, they're more or less locked in. Do you think Portland could spring an upset in the second round if Steph misses half of that series?
I mean, I think, you know, Portland is talking about going the distance because they're in that point right now where they're in a win now situation. But I think this year might be the year before Portland catapults themselves into the whole Houston Golden State area. Mm-hmm. Because I think they're close.
Yeah.
And I think internally they will be fine if they just have a 6-game series against Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
But with Curry out, I think that kind of expectation changes. If let's assume that Curry is out for the entirety of the second round.
Yeah.
Then I don't think 6 games is good enough for him anymore. Then it's either 7 games or a flat out win, serious win.
Yeah.
Whether that's realistic is a different case, but I mean, you'll have to basically chase around Dame and CJ and not pay attention to everyone else because they're just so dynamic. Mm-hmm. And if Jusuf Nurkić gets going, which I'm kind of waiting for to happen a little bit more because it seems like he's underperformed this year. So I hope that the playoffs would mean like a fresh season for him, like a new start.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no way that he doesn't eat Sasa's milkshake.
Or
drinks his milkshake, it's called. I mean, I think it's possible. Portland does need a better bench. Like, they are in a similar situation as Philly used to be before Bellinelli and Ilyasova and Fultz and all that. So they need some depth to pull it off. But good Lord, if all their starters are producing, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say they can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, because Al-Farouq Aminu was pretty inconsistent for most of the year, but he's really turned it on as of late. Same goes for Mo Harkless. You're right, outside of Shabazz Napier, Evan Turner, there isn't much production coming out of the bench. I mean, Ed Davis and Zach Collins have played well in spurts. But yeah, I mean, it's going to come down to that starting five. I'd probably feel is maybe dumb again, but I'd probably feel more confident in Utah springing the upset than I would Portland. But I mean,
yeah, because of the defense.
Yeah, but again, yeah. Like I there's a road there at least. I could see it happening. Like that, you know. I'm basically asking all these questions because I saw when the Curry news was announced, I saw a lot of people saying, "Well, he's going to miss the first round, but don't worry, he'll be back for the second." And I was like, "Well, what if there isn't a second? Like all of these teams in the West in that 3-8 race have basically been in the playoffs for a month. Like it's been win now since the All-Star break, basically. So like
they're yeah, and the Warriors have not had that mentality going in. So yeah.
Right. So like they're conditioned for this type of atmosphere, whereas the Warriors are like they're all just banged up and they're gonna have to get back on the court soon. I mean, you know, chemistry is not a huge issue for them, but like, I don't know. They feel more vulnerable than I think most people seem to be willing to acknowledge. And again, they might just destroy whoever's in their path because Kevin Durant might just go off for 40 a night. But I just don't understand why we're like underrating the possibility of a first round upset.
Okay, I'll just point something out here as well. So Damian Lillard over the past 18 games, which is that's a pretty significant chunk of the season. Would you agree with that?
Yep.
30.8 points a game on just 20.7 shots. I mean, this dude, it's 92% from the line, getting to the line damn near 10 times a game. Mm-hmm. Only 2.5 turnovers in that time frame. I mean, he's playing MVP caliber basketball at this point in time.
Yeah.
And if that transitions into the playoffs and he delivers this type of production, like, you can't get away with Quinn Cook on Dame or Sean Livingston.
Right.
I mean, what do? KD? I mean, I'm not sure what you even do.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's no offense to Quinn Cook, who's played well in Curry's absence.
But yeah, definitely, yeah.
Right, but, like, it's a fair question. I mean, I really don't know.
You know, he could put 50 on you and win a game by himself.
Right. Same goes for CJ.
Technically, yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mort, let's switch from the Warriors to the Rockets. Luckily, no huge injuries to report there. I mean, Chris Paul has been nursing a little hamstring injury, but it doesn't seem like it's all that serious. I think he was at least questionable to play Tuesday night against the Bulls. If I'm the Rockets, like, why? Don't bring him back. Just let him recover. The Bulls, they're playing the Suns on Friday. No, just like
this is a holiday.
Yeah, come on. But I mean, otherwise they've lost, I think I looked this up yesterday, so they were 30 and 12 they lost against the Clippers on January 15th. They were 30 and 12. Since then they have gone 30 and 2, over the last 2 months of the season. Their only losses were a 2-point loss at the New Orleans Pelicans and a 3-point loss at the Toronto Raptors. Any concerns about this Rockets team going into the playoffs?
No. Yeah. Nope. I'm pretty confident they'll make a lot of noise, and I maintain that they are the team to beat at this point. Yeah. As weird as it sounds.
Yeah. Especially with the Curry injury, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and maybe even without it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. We both were saying Rockets and Warriors was closer than a lot of people were giving credit to, even before the Curry injury. But yeah, I'm 100% with you. Rockets should be the favorites to win the NBA Finals as of this moment. I mean,
yeah, not saying like they're bound to do it.
Right.
Just so we make it clear to people out there, we're not saying that this is definitely going to happen, but at this point, they appear to be the better team. They're hungrier as well. I mean, I know that that's like an emotional stance that you can't quantify, but when they were asked about the 60 wins, they were just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
We don't care. That's not important.
Right.
Screw the 60 wins. I mean, championship.
You're not worried about Chris Paul having never made a conference finals. You don't think there's a curse?
Oh, come on. Screw those curses and all that. Look, yeah. This time around, he has a center who right now is averaging 14 and 11 and two blocks in just over 27 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Look, Clint Capela is out of this world, and we do not talk enough about this kid.
That is true.
The thing is, though, like we were talking about, we had an episode in regards to restricted free agents, because he's going to be a free agent this summer. Mm-hmm. And like because of the setup that they have in Houston, he is awesome, but he needs to have these type of guards as CP3 and James Harden to really be able to utilize the open space that they provide. So mm-hmm. I doubt that anyone else is going to throw big money at him if they don't have like an all NBA type point guard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to Houston just keeping this guy maybe a little bit cheaper than we expect, and him just developing further into like the best damn center in the league.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm not going to go that far.
No, you know what I mean. Like, in the ballpark of that, because he's so good. I know. Yeah. That's blasphemy because Joel Embiid is there.
Well,
I know.
Towns and Cousins and Davis.
Oh, until Towns actually learns how to play defense, I'm not really concerned, Brian.
Well, until Towns stops playing 45 minutes a game.
Plenty of time to learn defense, Brian.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, I guess the only concern about Houston on my end is, like, we know what they're trying to do, right? You want to go offensively, you want to hit threes and shots close to the basket. The Spurs had a formula last year where they guarded those two types of things very well and funneled. They just left mid-range shots open, and Houston refused to take them for much of that series. Luckily, now they have Chris Paul, who has made a career out of those shots.
I was just about to interrupt you and go with that. Yeah.
So I'm not especially concerned there, but you know, I could see a team gumming up a game or two against them and forcing them to adjust. But at this point, I would be very surprised if Houston at least did not make the conference finals. And as you said, Mort, I think they should be considered the favorites to win the NBA finals as well.
Mm.
Now let's move to the East, where we also, we got some bad news in Boston. Kyrie Irving, he left in a game on March 11th due to left knee soreness, missed a couple games. Then we got word that he was going to get a second opinion on his knee. And then on Saturday, like within hours of the Curry news, we also find out that Kyrie underwent a minimally invasive procedure to remove a tension wire in his left knee. The wire was originally placed as part of the surgical repair of the fractured patella he sustained during the 2015 NBA Finals. The patella had fully healed, and the knee was found to be completely structurally sound, but he is expected to return to basketball activities in 3 to 6 weeks. And based on that wording, again, return to basketball activities does not mean he's going to be back playing, you know, suiting up in a playoff game. So we haven't gotten word. You know, the Celtics, unlike Steve Kerr, have not definitively ruled him or effectively ruled him out of the first round. But in my mind, he's likely to miss the first round or at least much of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask the same question I did with the Warriors, Mort. Do you think the Celtics are in danger of a first round upset?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Look, if I'm Boston, I'm just looking at this season and going, whatever happens, that's fine.
Yep.
Like, if they, theoretically, even if they get swept in the first round, doesn't matter because of all the injuries, just does not matter. Look at it as a gelling year, you know, all these new guys coming together. And then next year, when Gordon is ready and Kyrie is ready and they might have gotten Marcus Smart off their roster. Which I think will help them eventually, even though he is fantastic defensively. But at that price tag, I'm not sure that's going to be enough.
Right.
Then I just think next year is the better year to just look at it and go, you know, this is going to be the season where we really just become the dominant force of the East.
Yep.
Because then they've had a year, everybody knows everybody, there won't be these tensions, hopefully Gordon Hayward doesn't go down again, and So whatever happens, if they make the conference finals, good on them. If they lose four first games, fine. Mm-hmm. No problem.
Yep. Totally agree. Your thing about it doesn't matter at this point. Like, Jaylen Brown has turned out to be a very good player. Jason Tatum looks like a future all-star. Like, they got, you know, given the circumstances they were dealing with from opening night, I would say this season probably went better than anyone could have reasonably expected. They're 51-23 without Gordon Hayward. Like, they very well could have been flirting with 60 wins. I mean, hell, they're going to flirt with 60 wins already. Like, they could have been a 60-win team with Gordon Hayward in the lineup. So, yeah, I mean, ideally, Kyrie will come back, and maybe they can make a run once he does. But right now, they're, you know, the race in the East is still cluttered as well. Right now, the Bucks are 7th at 39-34. The Heat are a half game behind them. And the Wizards are only a full game up on the Bucks, so they could move up. Actually, I mean, they're 2.5 behind the Pacers, so the Wizards are probably going to be 6th or 7th, but like one of those three teams, Washington, Milwaukee, or Miami, is most likely playing Boston. Milwaukee would be an absolute nightmare matchup, but...
Would they, though? I'm so glad you mentioned them. Look, I had them as that as well, but when you look at their record and the up and down season, I mean... Is that the team in the league this year that's underperformed the most compared to expectations?
I would say... And talent? Charlotte. Charlotte probably beats them.
You think so? I mean, look, before this season, I looked at Milwaukee as going, oh, they could win 50.
Yeah. I think you and I both pegged them as a top four team.
Yeah. I mean, look, this team with that level of talent, and they're 39-34 without, you know... Giannis missing a lot of time. Like, he's missed 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Middleton has not missed a single game. Eric Bledsoe has 62 games under his belt now after the trade.
They're missing Rookie of the Year Malcolm Brogdon, though.
They are, and they got Jabari Parker back pretty late.
Yeah.
So obviously, there are some issues, but still, 39-34, I still expected a lot better.
I really did too, but I think, you know, looking at them last year, they were kind of, they just floated along, were in that same boat. They were 42-40, and then come the playoffs, like, they put a real damn scare in the Raptors in the first round. So
they didn't win.
Yeah.
And if that's the same situation this year, I wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee's front office is going, okay, that's 2 years in a row where we've kind of floated about, given someone a scare in the first round, but really haven't gotten ourselves further.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if this disappointment of this season leads to some changes next year.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I just think Giannis in the playoffs is terrifying, and no team
should. Oh, Giannis is terrifying regardless. Even when he's on 60 minutes, you're terrified because of looking at him. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean...
He's going to own everything for the next 10 years.
Right. So... Yeah, I mean, you're right. They've definitely been inconsistent and have underperformed based on talent. But I think the talent is there for them to string together a pretty damn good series, especially with, you know, Kyrie most likely out, Marcus Smart most likely out. Eric Bledsoe, we don't talk enough about him too, but he's a damn good point guard. And I think he would eat Terry Rozier's lunch, with all due respect to Terry Rozier. So, yeah, I mean, I really think any one of those teams could pull off the upset. Like, the Wizards will get John Wall back soon. The Heat, I mean, it feels like smoke and mirrors with them a lot of the time, but they're good. Like, they don't have any one true superstar, but they just have, like, 8 or 9 really legitimately good players, which makes them kind of harder to beat. Like, it's not like Toronto last year where you shut down Lowry and DeRozan and their head falls off. Like, Miami, if you shut down Whiteside, all right, cool. Like, Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson and James Johnson can beat you.
So, one thing here about Miami, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you just alluded to, they have no superstar.
Yeah.
The Heat right now are projected to having 0 picks in this draft.
Mm.
0 picks.
Oh, okay. And the Goran Dragic trade.
Huh? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy.
So, when you look at that, and you go, oh, they have, like, the roster with all the role players just ready. They just need, like, someone who's featured, like a superstar. Not having draft picks is just, oh, that is just not good planning.
Yeah.
Because that entire team is just there waiting for someone to step up and go, oh, hey, hi, I'm a star, and right. everyone there, you're there for me. I mean, I have spot-up shooters. I have defensive-oriented guys. I have rebounders. I have hard screen setters. I have everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate.
Yeah, that is. I guess they wanted Hassan Whiteside to be that guy, but
he's just not quite the silence there. Is deafening. Yeah,
yeah, no. Yeah.
And getting Dwayne Wade back is fun and all, but right.
I mean, he's had some good offensive explosions. Like, he single-handedly killed the Sixers one night, but
yeah, yeah. I know, but yeah. you know, he's 36, so
right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad we agree that Boston is in real danger in the first round. Let's move to the Cavs more. We've talked about them recently, so we don't need to go too far in depth on them. But again, they're in a battle for the number three seed. They, yep. in all likelihood, I mean, they're not going to play the Sixers in the first round. It's probably going to come down to Indiana, maybe Washington, maybe Milwaukee. Do you think any of those teams have a chance to knock them off?
I mean, yeah, honestly, because I'm kind of concerned. LeBron is doing everything he can at this point just to keep the team alive and afloat. And he is, I believe, still a human being, potentially.
In theory.
And in theory, and human beings tend to get tired at some point.
Yeah.
When they assert themselves for so long. And he has for quite a period of time. And there's not really a whole lot of help in that rotation. I mean, Kevin Love has come back and produced pretty fairly, but not as like a second fiddle. Rodney Hood has just been abysmal, honestly. Larry Nance has been good, but he's low volume. So I could see a first round upset there. And I'm glad we talked about it because right before we started recording, I told you I had a hot take trade.
Yes.
Okay. So a lot of parameters have to be there.
Oh boy, okay.
No, but yeah, but like you and I have talked about this at length, that LeBron is probably more inclined to leave this summer, right?
Right.
Okay. So imagine him wanting to go to the Spurs. Like let's say LeBron just said, you know what, screw it, I just want to have a couple years under Pop just to see what it is like. Just what I want to experience the best coach of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that on the Spurs end, you learn that Kawhi just does not want to return to San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, if LeBron leaves, he leaves. Like, there's no way, you know, you get anything for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the Spurs don't really have the cap space. So a sign-and-trade LeBron for Kawhi straight up.
Oh, God damn it.
No, but, like, think about it. Kawhi insists he does not want to re-sign with the team. He does not want to return.
Yeah, I mean, I think both teams would do it.
Yeah,
but
I'm just saying that could be fun.
I think Sarah, the sound that you just heard is Sarah blocking you on Twitter forever.
I know, but I know, and I apologize to Sarah. Okay, no, I don't, but close to it. No, but it's an interesting, you know, thought experiment though, because LeBron, I have to assume, would be interested in playing for Pop. He loves Pop,
yeah, right?
And if Cleveland bows out in the first round, he would definitely want to go somewhere where, you know, you have an established culture. And with all the unknowns of Kawhi running about, come on, get with me on this one.
I'm not caving. I just don't see why LeBron, like, I don't know, joining that Spurs team, they'd be right in there. Yeah. No, I'm not concerned about the fit. It's just like, I just don't understand why he would go west. And I'm not saying that just because I want him to go on the Sixers, but like, if you go to the west, you have to play Golden State and Houston, one of those two, if not both, before you even get to the finals. Like, stay in the East.
Pop Love, man.
I know, but he can play in the Olympics in 2020. There you go. You can play for Pop then.
That's
you want to win rings, homie. Stay in the East and you can win your rings.
I just want this chronicle, because if it happens, we'll go back to this episode.
That's fair.
Yeah, okay, good.
Just like if he goes to the Sixers, I'm going to stunt on everyone for the next 15 years.
Oh, and you know what? You know who's also going to be stunted in his development? Ben Simmons.
Yeah. All right. But on the Cavs note, I mean, we've talked, you know, I think a couple episodes ago that our biggest fear out of them was inconsistency. Since that episode, though, Kevin Love returned and has looked like he missed no time at all. Like, he's been great since coming back, and they've picked up big wins over Milwaukee, over Toronto. Mm-hmm. That Toronto game was a playoff game. Like, that was an excellent game on both sides. So, you know, they've won 6 of their last 7, 4 of which came against Phoenix twice, Chicago, and Brooklyn. So I'm not taking too much stock in that, but I feel more confident about Cleveland right now than I do Boston. Like, if Cleveland gets the 3, I think they're in the conference finals no matter what.
I too feel more confident in Cleveland than Boston, but I'm just saying that Cleveland, given that the way that they're using LeBron right now and playing him that many minutes, just is kind of concerning. I wouldn't be, like, if he has just one of those games where he's tired and can't produce, mm-hmm. they lose. Yeah. He has to be on, you know, the A plus LeBron James scale, caliber, greatness, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. for them to win at this point. Take him out of the equation and they become what? Like a 23 win team?
Yeah. And I mean, the problem for them is they have a game lead over the Sixers right now for the 3 seed. You're going to want, both of those teams are desperately wanting the 3 seed so you can avoid Toronto until the conference finals. But as I mentioned earlier, Philly has an absolute cakewalk schedule the rest of the season. Cleveland, on the other hand, they are at Miami Tuesday night, back-to-back at Charlotte Wednesday, then have a 4-game homestand against New Orleans, Dallas, Toronto, Washington, at Philly next Friday, and then close out with a home-and-home against the Knicks. So, I mean, they have a bunch, like, you know, Miami could be tricky. New Orleans is very much playing for something as well.
Oh, yeah. I think they're going to drop the one against the Pelicans.
Yeah. And then, like, Toronto, I think those guys are going to go all out again. I think they mm-hmm. want to set a tone. Washington, same thing. Like, and Philly. Like, all of those teams have something to play for. The only ones that don't on their schedule are Charlotte, Dallas, and the 2 games against the Knicks. So it makes me nervous if they slide to the 4, and frankly it should make Toronto nervous too, because that would suck if whatever team, I mean, I think Toronto and Cleveland are the 2 best teams in the East right now with Kawhi or with Kyrie sidelined. Mm. So it would suck if those 2 teams have to play in the conference semifinals, and whichever team in the 2-3 bracket just gets to kind of march its way to the conference finals uncontested, provided that the Celtics go down. Yep. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be, you know, everyone's talking about the Western Conference playoff race, but the East has some pretty fascinating implications as well, especially with the Kyrie injury. So there's a lot to monitor there in the coming days and weeks as well. So more, let's move now to the Raptors. Any big concerns there for you?
Nope.
Nothing at all.
Not sure what that should be. DeRozan is still healthy. Kyle Lowry is still healthy. Serge Ibaka is still healthy. Jonas Valanciunas is still taking threes. I'm digging what they're doing.
So here are my 2 concerns for them. And neither of them are that big. Like, again, much like Houston, I think Toronto should be favored to make it out of the East and make it to the finals. With all due respect mm-hmm. to Cleveland and what they've done, I think Toronto has proven itself as the best team in the East this year. 2 things do worry me, though. 1, I fear a reversion to the isolation hero ball kind of play that they had last year when they are in close games in the waning moments. I saw a little mm-hmm. bit of that in that Cleveland-Toronto game the other night. It felt like Kyle Lowry and, like, ball movement kind of died out on a few possessions. And if they revert to that at the worst possible time, that could be an issue. And then we've talked
right, about this. Right, but hasn't that been a concern all the year, though? Like,
yes.
Hasn't that been in the back of your mind at all? But, like, when you asked me if there's any concerns, I was thinking outside of, you know, what everyone is concerned about, which is what you just said.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it has been. And they've, you know, they're 74 games in, and they've proven most of the time that they're good and they're sticking to the system. But I think that is, you know, it's an underlying issue, at least worth, as you said, keeping in the back of your mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, in that case, I agree with you. Then I have that concern. I was just thinking about, okay, if you have any new concerns, because that one, I feel, has been a thing since the start of the season. Even when they changed their offense, you're still like, I have to see them prove in the playoffs. Right. Until they've delivered that, I'm still cautious about it. But, I mean, look at them right now. If you disregard that concern, they're just bloody excellent.
Yeah. Right. This is, again, it's not a enormous concern because I think they're the best team, and I don't think we're going to see that. But, you know, the fact that I saw a little bit of it in that Cleveland game, at least, like, raised a minor alarm. And then the other thing is that, you know, we've mentioned repeatedly how damn good Toronto's bench is, but as we've also seen in playoffs past, a lot of teams adopt a Tibbsian approach once the playoffs roll around, and starters go from the low 30s to the high 30s or even the low 40s in terms of minutes. So Dwayne Casey has come out and said he's not going to change his rotation. He's going to stick with his bench. They've been producing all year. But those guys are going to have less opportunities now against fellow reserves. Like, there's a difference between, you know, doing that against a Rodney Hood versus a LeBron James. So, yeah. Right. So, like, yeah, Toronto's bench and depth is a weapon, and it's a great resource.
Yeah.
But I do worry. I mean, you know, that five-man lineup of CJ Miles, Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, and DeLon Wright, they have the second-best net rating of any five-man lineup that's played at least 250 minutes. They're at 21.3. So, like, they've been absolutely killing it all year. This is no disrespect to that bench unit. But, again, it's a little bit different when you're going against fellow reserves versus going against, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers starting five.
Yeah, I'm honestly not concerned about the starting five in Cleveland outside of LeBron.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Love.
I'm not nervous about Kevin Love. Look, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, like, you know what you're going to get. He never drives the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how to close him out. What you don't know is what the freight train LeBron James is going to do.
Right.
Like, he is so unpredictable. He's the engine. Is that, I legitimately think that, like I mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, that Cleveland would be a 23-win team without him.
Mm-hmm.
They would be dreadfully predictable.
Yeah.
And George Hill, just so we don't forget, has actually played worse for Cleveland than he did in Sacramento all year.
Yeah. Well, okay. So then, disregard the Cleveland example. Say in the first round, say you get Milwaukee. Like, you're going to have
to go against... Now you're talking. Yeah. Right, because,
now you're
going
to have to go against Giannis and Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe. And maybe, I mean, in theory, Malcolm Brogdon will be back by the time the playoffs start. So
that's because you're going up against length, athleticism, creativity, which, you know, the Cleveland supporting cast has virtually none of.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. Like, that's a legitimate threat.
Yeah, or Miami, too. You got Josh Richardson, James Johnson, Dragic, Whiteside, Olenek. If he comes back, Olenek, yeah. Tyler Johnson.
Oh, yeah, Tyler Johnson's been good recently.
Yeah, yeah. Wayne Ellington off the bench. I mean, like, you know.
He's my crush, by the way.
Is he?
Spoiler.
Nice. Yeah. Good, good. Yeah. And then, like, Philly, too. You know, Philly's starting lineup, among teams with or five-man lineups with at least 250 minutes, they're third in the league. They're with a net rating 21.1. So, like, if you've got Toronto's reserves against some combination of Covington, Embiid, Redick, Sarge, and Simmons, like, again, I guess we'll see two of the best three lineups in the league going against each other. So if
could be fun.
You know, if the Philly slips to four, it's at least a possibility. So, again, none of these are enormous concerns. I am much more concerned about the Warriors and the Celtics. I'd say in terms of my overall panic, I'm right. Celtics is number one. Yeah. Warriors is number two. I guess Warriors and Cavs are kind of in the same tier just because.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, the Warriors still have a lot of talent. I just have no idea what to expect out of the Cavs. And then the Rockets and Raptors, I'm probably like slightly more concerned about the Raptors than I am the Rockets, but I'm not all that concerned about either team. This is just
I hadn't thought about putting it in tiers. And regarding Boston, I'm just not worried because I think their circumstances are just so special. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't matter, like I mentioned earlier, if they are swept or whatever. So they're not even on my list. Mm-hmm. I would have Cleveland up top. And that mm-hmm. that's really the only one I've given any consideration of because mm-hmm. I think they are overplaying LeBron. I think LeBron's quest to go for 82 games just because is silly. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that if he collapses and just is less effective in the playoffs, not that I expect him to be, but there's always this concern. And given that he's 33, I mean, you just can't rule that possibility out. Mm-hmm. I think that just leaves them completely naked. Completely.
Yeah.
So that they are light years ahead mm-hmm. in terms of my concern regarding them. And then everyone else, I'm not really concerned about Houston at all. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm concerned about Golden State to an extent, but they're also coached by Steve Kerr,
right.
And I have tremendous faith in Steve Kerr as a coach and as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that whatever adversity they're going to bump into, like he's got the correct approach to it because he's just so damn smart that it's making me jealous.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Cleveland to me is just the one team I'm looking at consistently and going, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my panic for the Warriors, aside from just Steph being out, is like, I just think most likely whoever they're going to draw in the first round is like a legitimate team. It's better than a typical seven seed. So it's more just like, oh shit, they're in for a real series no matter what, just because the West has been so competitive, more so than... Mm. Just, you know, I think they're like
definitely I could see that,
screwed yeah. without Curry. But yeah, I guess it'll really depend on matchups. Like if they get Spurs or Minnesota in the first round, I'm not all that concerned given those teams' respective issues as well. So I'm sorry for spoiling your crush already, but do you want to explain why your crush again?
I think I spoiled my crush.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You did. Yeah.
I did. Wayne Ellington, I was just, the thing was, he had an 8-point game 2 days ago,
mm-hmm.
and I saw some of it, and I saw someone on Twitter say, oh, that was an unusual bad game from Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought about it and was like, that's actually accurate. Like, mm-hmm. he's been so solid all year long. And I thought, even though he hasn't had like the most impressive week or whatever, I just thought, you know, he deserves to have his name mentioned
mm-hmm.
during this season. And I've just picked out his last 8 games as an example now. 14.4 points a game in 30 minutes. He's hitting 3.8 shots from behind the arc at 42.3%. And despite averaging 30 minutes and 11.5 shot attempts and 1.5 assists, he's only turning the ball over once. He's one of those guys who's just spotting up and hitting shots and not turning the ball over. And I don't have a number on this, but I would love to see how little time he spends with the ball in his hands. Because mm-hmm. compared to how little time he spends on the ball,
mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that he's one of the most efficient players in the NBA in terms of points produced when averaged it into how many seconds he's holding the basketball.
Yeah.
Because it's just, he's so efficient. And having those guys who can come in, not, you know, take up a lot of possessions, but just be ready to shoot,
mm-hmm.
they're so valuable.
Yeah, right. I mean, the Sixers have proven it with Redick and Bellinelli the whole year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Bellinelli handles the ball a little bit more, and yeah, he does it well. But I get your sense of it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, catch and shoot guys in general, like it.
Yeah.
You can't always just rely on guys creating off the dribble for themselves. Like having someone who can catch and shoot is an enormous gift. Like, I mean, shit, look at Ray Allen back with the Heat and Celtics exactly. before that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
And the beauty of it, again, that's why I mentioned the turnovers, is when your role is just catching and shooting the ball, it also lowers the risk of turning the ball over, which is just such a huge thing in today's league, right, especially when you go into the playoffs where one single turnover can just change the whole game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the whole 3-and-D evolution is also going to look at this issue, I think. I think when you have a very secure superstar and you just flank him mm-hmm. with a bunch of 3-and-D guys,
yep.
I would expect that overall turnover rate just to go down. So it's really interesting to see.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, he's a very good pick, Mort. I think I need to cheat, actually. I was going to do one guy, but I think that we need to do two. So, and they're both, actually, ironically, replacements for guys who we expressed concerns about this episode. So mm-hmm. one is Quinn Cook, who he's moved into the starting lineup, I guess now 8 games ago in place of Curry, then went back to the bench when Curry came back, and then went right back to the starting lineup Sunday against the Jazz. Didn't do all that much in his first 3 games as a starter. He had 25 points combined, but over his last 5, he's at 20.6 points, 5.2 assists, 5 rebounds, almost 3 threes and a steal and a half per game. So, you know, we expressed concern about Curry being gone in this episode, but if Quinn Cook continues to produce at this rate, it's going to be less of an issue. That said, I mean, also KD and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green have been out, so he's not going to continue to produce at this rate when those guys come back. But, I mean, you know, compared to, he didn't really play all that much the rest of the year. So just knowing right. he's capable of producing like this, Will Gottlieb of Bleacher Report had a piece about him yesterday, I believe, and he spoke with Steve Kerr, who's just like, yeah, man, we've been encouraging him to shoot 20, or, you know, we know, like, right. based on our personnel right now, you need to score 20 or 25 a game. Like, we've been encouraging him to shoot, and Cook has said, like, that's been huge for his confidence as well, because he bounced around the league the first couple of years. He's mostly been in the D League, played really well there. I think he was a 2-time D League All-Star. So he's, you know, he's been successful over the last couple of years. He just hasn't found a place to latch on. And then he's saying, like, going to the Warriors, you're just, like, trying not to step on anyone's toes because you're playing with 4 All-Stars. Mm-hmm. So for, like, Steph to be – he had some quote about, like, Steph told him, like, I don't care if you're 0-for-25. On that 26th shot, don't hesitate. Just pull up. And yep. for Steph to be delivering that message, you know, he – Quinn Cook could be a real X factor come playoff time for the Warriors. So, shouts to him.
Shouts to him. Okay, before you reveal your next one,
yeah,
I just want to, because you just mentioned Quinn Cook's last 5 games.
Yep.
Now, and you just read the stat. I'm just going to repeat it because people might have forgotten.
Yeah.
20.6 points a game, 5 boards, 5.2 assists, 52% from downtown on 5.5 attempts in 37 minutes. Okay, that's an all-star line right there.
Right.
But in those 5 games, that was only his 34th to 38th career game. Mm. Now, what's interesting about that, had that been a rookie who over a 5-game period had averaged those numbers, Twitter would have gone absolutely batshit insane.
Yeah.
Called this guy a future Hall of Famer, yep. started like breaking off, you know, the team that he played for just to rebuild it around this guy. Mm-hmm. But because this is a person who's bounced around, there isn't like a similar response. Like, you look at the age, oh, he's 25, oh, he's bounced around, he was signed to training camp deals, he played in the G League, he was, you know, in summer league and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Then these type of players are forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that they are, because it just proves that there is value to be found in those guys. And yeah. I want NBA teams to pull the trigger on these type of guys more so than go back to like some old washed up players during the summer and go, hey, Mr. 20-year vet,
right.
like, do you want to come here for the veterans minimum? Don't yeah. screw that. Look at what you've got.
Yeah.
Look at those players you can find. And I remember, like, I'm just going to pimp us too, because you and I were all in on Quinn Cook last year. We said some team should mm-hmm. sign this guy. We wanted Quinn Cook. We did not understand why Quinn Cook was not given a proper chance somewhere.
Yeah.
Look at what's happening right now. Right. And that's for the defending champion. Yeah. So NBA teams out there, just go find these guys. They are out there crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors signed him to a two-way deal. We saw this with Tyrone Wallace with the Clippers earlier this year.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, there is talent out there, and hopefully these two-way deals, we've seen a couple huge success stories this year, so hopefully that continues to facilitate that type of development moving forward. But, right. Yeah, I mean, in this first year of these two-way deals, you know, the Warriors and Clippers are sure as hell happy these exist now. I'll say that much.
Mm-hmm.
The other crush, I am begrudgingly doing this, but I have to give props where props are due. Terry Rozier, over his last eight, he's been starting, or no, sorry, last seven, he started. Similar stats to Quinn Cook, frankly, 18.6 points, six rebounds, nearly five assists, nearly four threes. Ironically, shooting better from three-point range, 41.7%, than he is overall, 39.6 during that stretch. But you know, in Kyrie's absence, he's played really damn well. And you know, we've made countless jokes about Danny Ainge and his steadfast refusal to trade Terry Rozier, no matter what. You know, it's been a popular meme of, oh, LeBron James for Terry Rozier? No, you need to throw in something else for that. But to Ainge's credit and to Rozier's credit, he's showing why. You know, this, you don't want to give up a guy who could produce like this. Like, this is one hell of an insurance policy when a guy like Kyrie goes down. He signed for one more year on his rookie deal. I'll be really damn interested to see what happens with him in the summer of 2019. Mm. But in the meantime, deserved shout-outs, Terry Rozier. Begrudging deserved shout-outs.
Well, to be fair, though. Like, I don't think anybody made fun of Rozier's talent.
No, I loved
him coming out of Louisville.
Right.
I absolutely loved him. I mean, at that point in time, I thought he was maybe taken just a little bit too high at 16.
Yep.
But, I mean, that was just a small thing.
Yeah.
I would much rather see Boston give him an expanded role and hand a big chunk of Marcus Smart's minutes to him instead, because he's just that much more productive.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Shout out to Terry Rozier. Good pick, Brian. I'm all in on that one.
Yeah. I mean, they deserve it. And, you know, if Boston and Golden State survive these first round threats, it's going to be in large part because of Quinn Cook and Terry Rozier. So, yeah, those guys deserve props as we head down the stretch here. So, until next time, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. Our Twitter handles are in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And as a reminder, we are being hosted on FanRag Sports until the end of the month. So for now, you can follow them on FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. And then please, please, please subscribe via iTunes if you're on Apple or whatever Android apps you use. I'm sure Mort will fill those in shortly, but we will be
Pocket Casts and Podcast Addict.
Perfect. Yeah, so we will be hosted somewhere else come Monday. If you subscribe to our feeds, that transition should be seamless. If you don't, you'll have to follow us on Twitter or follow Mort and I as well to get updates on when the new episodes come out. But just do yourself a favor and subscribe to the feeds. Make it easy. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'll probably declare for the NBA draft since LiAngelo Ball did too.
Good. Yeah. I think you have an equal chance of being drafted.
Aw.
Later, Mort.
Later.